We're extremely product focused, though, Mark. We don't really see ourselves as a sales organization. We see ourselves as a true SaaS business, purely focused on the recruitment and staffing sector. We don't care about any other type of customers apart from recruiters. That's all we'll ever do.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm delighted to be joined by Eloise Sutton Kirkby. Eloise is the co-founder and director of growth at Vincere, a market-leading all-in-one ATS CRM, which is run by ex-recruiters. Vincere means to win or conquer in Latin, and they weaponize recruiters through tech and specialize in helping mid-sized recruiters to beat the big boys. Eloise started her recruiting career way back when with Michael Page in Tokyo. Eloise, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mark. Delighted to be here.
All right. Oh, I should have mentioned you actually are also a podcast host. So you've got a show called The Contract Recruiter, which is available everywhere you listen to podcasts. So check that out. And by the way, we'll include a link to, in the show notes as well. So it's cool interviewing another podcaster. I feel like, yeah, this I have to do this really well because you're a pro, right?
No, not at all. Please, you can hardly compare my little baby podcast to what you've done, Mark. I mean, the idea of The Contract Recruiter is quite different to what you're doing. So mine is kind of almost selfishly quite educational. Because it's all about what does contract recruitment mean in different parts of the world. So the idea is we take our listeners on kind of a global tour to help understand what contract recruitment looks like in Australia, Japan, and the next installment is for the US.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll come on to this. You are, because you have a very international business and you're headquartered in Vietnam, which is interesting. And we'll talk about how and why that all came about. I noticed I was rereading your LinkedIn profile before we jumped on here. And I just noticed you graduated from University of Glasgow. I didn't realize you had a Scottish connection.
Well, yeah. So I'm originally from Leeds. I went to Glasgow Uni for 5 years. Did an MA in French and English literature, which I've literally never used in the remainder of my career. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, I love Glasgow. Great city, great people, nice and gritty. A lot of resilience in Glasgow, I'd say, is a characteristic.
Yeah, you could say that.
Straight out of uni, fell into recruitment in Leeds, actually, which is where I started my recruitment journey with Michael Page many moons ago.
Ah, fantastic. And then how did you... So I live just outside Edinburgh. I lived in Edinburgh for years and years.
That's the posh bit of Scotland, Mark. That's a nice
bit. Yeah, I know. It is beautiful and very multicultural, international feel to it. So, okay, so you started your recruiting career in Leeds. Mm-hmm. How did you end up in Tokyo?
So I started with recruitment, was all right. I was pretty inconsistent, I'd say, but you know, I was pretty clueless, 25, first real job, to be honest. Had some great bosses back then who I'm still in contact with, Patrick Smith, little shout out for him. I realized quite quickly though, within my first sort of year really in recruitment, that I enjoyed the job, but I didn't necessarily want to stay in the UK in recruitment. I really had itchy feet and wanted to travel. So I approached my boss and said, you know, I want to stay with the business. Could you help me move? And incredibly, they said, yeah, okay, hit your target and we'll help you with that. Where do you want to go? So I said, well, New York? I went, no, Eloise, you're good, but you're not quite that good. You're not going to New York. But they said, well, there's space in the Tokyo office. So it was really random that I ended up going out to Tokyo. And I'm really grateful to Michael Page for allowing me to do it. And I had another great boss there, David Leithhead, who really, really helped me bring me on. So yeah, that's fantastic. How I ended up in Asia. And I've never gone back, Mark, for my sins.
I have a couple of clients in Tokyo, actually. And so shout out to Alla Ismailova, who is Russian originally, but she is fluent in Japanese and she's based over there. What's interesting about Tokyo is like they're one of the few markets where it's still 30% plus fees is the norm. And they seem to be able to maintain that. It's also the second or third largest recruitment market after the US.
It's the second. And I know that because I looked into it in quite a lot of detail for my podcast, The Contract Recruiter. So yeah, it's the second largest market, very much a staffing market. So 90% of that is Haken or temp, as we'd call it. It is a beautiful market, especially after, you know, cutting your teeth in the UK, where, you know, recruitment in the UK, this is back in like 2005, it's a graft. You know, you're coming into a cold desk, and even with a logo behind you like Michael Page, it's still bloody hard work. You know, getting jobs, you're building your client base out. When I landed in Tokyo, I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this is the land of milk and honey. I can just call up, ask for a meeting, and you'll see me. I'll ask for jobs and you'll give me them. The challenge in Tokyo, and I think this is still the same today, it was very, very candidate dry. So finding good bilingual candidates was really, really a challenge. I was working in a pretty uninspiring, for me anyway, area of internal audit, which was certainly not, you know, my passion, and it's certainly not my area of expertise. But still, you know, the fees were about 40% in those days, which is... Wow. Yeah, pretty unique, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. That's so cool. Yeah. So tell me the story then of how and why you and Bernie started a software company.
So Bernie is co-founder and CEO of Vincere. He's an Aussie. He had his own business in recruitment for about 16 years. So, you know, whereas I was a consultant working at Michael Page, you know, he had his own business. He started it in the UK in Tunbridge Wells, grew it pretty large, saw an opportunity out in Tokyo and took the business out to Tokyo. And I think he had about 300 and odd people across the two countries. It was really an IT contract business that he had. He sold it to Hays. So Hays Japan was Bernie's business. So he made a nice tidy sum out of that, retired, inverted commas, whilst in his 30s, but realized pretty quickly that, you know, what are you going to do? He's a workaholic, I'd say, in the best possible sense, extremely passionate about recruitment, but didn't really have the appetite to start another recruitment business. But we both wanted to stay within the sphere of this industry, which we both love. He had implemented three systems during his 16 years as a business owner. He'd built out these tech stacks that ultimately became debt stacks, and we like to say Frankenstacks. So really, Vincere was born because, you know, we'd both lived as recruiters and realized that when it came to recruitment tech, there had to kind of be a better way, something truly cloud-based, which could give recruitment firms as much as possible under the one roof. So that's why we started the business, which was 2012.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And you guys have taken off like a rocket. We'll talk about your sort of entrepreneurial business and scaling the business in a minute. First, could you say more about the Frankenstack thing that you mentioned?
Yeah, so the Frankenstack. I shouldn't laugh really because it's not funny. So the Frankenstack's what happens when recruitment firms build out this tech stack. They start by implementing, you know, CRM, ATS, and then when they, you know, branch out to temp or contract, they plug in an online timesheet. They have candidate client portals which are provided by a third party or another provider. They have analytics, which is often another third-party platform or stuck on Excel or, given to them by an external provider. What they end up building is hodgepodging together this kind of mismatched mess of different tech systems. It's a really easy thing to do because what you think you're doing is, you know, you're buying different platforms from different vendors, which might all be best in breed. However, ultimately, it's a bit of a trap. Because what you end up with as a recruitment business owner is multiple vendors, multiple invoices at the end of each month, systems that don't really integrate. Maybe they integrate in a shallow, kind of meaningless way, whereas, you know, there might be a one-way data push from the CRM to the timesheet system, for example. But if you have lots of different vendors giving you your tech, nothing is going to work in a seamless two-way sync. And that is really important, in our opinion, Mark, because, you know, you hear recruiters talk all day long about the power of automation. You know, the future is automation. That's where we're all heading, that promised land. If you have a Frankenstack, that pipe dream of automation will never happen. And so, you know, when we looked at the landscape, this is over a decade ago now, and what we saw is, you know, a lot of our competitors, you know, they sell you a CRM system, which is really it should be the most important system you use across a business. It should be the system of record where everything is happening. Your recruiters should live in the CRM ideally. So what they'll do is, you know, they'll sell you the CRM, and then often they'll outsource what we would consider to be core features to a marketplace, to a third party. And we just think that's kind of madness. We think that as your provider, we should be able to give you as much as, you know, you need to grow the business, stuff that's really core. So certainly analytics should be given to you by your CRM provider, and everything should really be working in that native two-way sync. So that's why we've built what we've built. It's not been the easy route. Believe me, it'd be a lot easier to build integrations with other systems. But we think it's the right thing to do for our customers, because we can really give them that true automation piece. That's what we've been working to over the past decade.
It's interesting, because automation is one of my favorite themes. Mm-hmm. And it's something which I think if you can actually do it, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Automating the right parts. Could you give an example of a workflow or a part of the business that could be successfully automated that most recruiters are not really taking advantage of?
I mean, I think for sort of mid-sized recruitment firms, which is really our kind of target market, I guess, you know, anywhere with say 10 to, we go up to max 1,000 consultants. That's where we do very well. An area of automation that's very weak usually is between the front, middle, back office. So, you know, around your pay and bill systems, collecting of time from your candidates. Often what we see is that, you know, a placement's made in the CRM, pushed out to the pay and bill software, and then never seen in the CRM again. So the consultants don't know, you know, if timesheets are being submitted, you know, and if they're paid on those timesheets coming in. That's kind of important. And it's just one example of where data just gets really siloed between different teams within a sort of mid-size organization. So we've really focused quite obsessively on that kind of middle back office automation, because we see a big opportunity there. And it's almost like, well, you know, that is an area of pain for a lot of mid-sized recruitment firms, automating the middle back office. That's where you see a lot of them, when I speak to recruitment bosses, which is what I do all day long, from all over the world, I often sense that a lot of the time they're quite scared of their back office team. They don't really know all of the processes, because it's all very manual still. And what we want to do is, you know, help those guys truly automate the middle and back office. So it shouldn't matter if your back office, you know, team get up and leave. You know, your business could still run, because it's truly automated and systemized. That's just one example.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, maybe we'll get into a few more as we go along. So I understand this idea of the Frankenstack now. Talk to me about your journey as an entrepreneurial sort of tech startup, and how that, you know, what have been the key milestones along the way?
So when we started the business back in 2012, we actually started life not as a system purely focused on recruiters. We actually started building three products, Mark, which even now sounds absolutely nuts. And it was stupid. We started by building a corporate ATS, which we built, and we've focused most of our efforts on that, and we're relatively successful with it. So this ATS, we sold it to corporate clients, enterprise clients, quite a few government offices in Singapore used us, big brands across Asia, Fitness First, KFC used us, banks, etc. And we also had another platform, which is an employee like HR big data platform, which was probably a bit ahead of its time. And then we also had our staffing CRM, which became Vincere. So we started with almost three products that we started developing in tandem. We were quite well funded, and you know, relatively successful with really the ATS. What we found though was that we had to kind of pick a lane. In 2015, we kind of came to a cash crunch really, and our investors said, look, stop playing with technology, pick a system, and let's just go all in on that. So we looked at, you know, the corporate HR audience, and then we looked at the recruitment staffing audience, which is kind of, you know, who we are. And we decided to pick the recruitment industry over corporate HR for various reasons.
Such as?
Main one being, you know, we understand recruitment. We understand the staffing. Well, I've sold to, you know, both the corporate side and, you know, recruiters. Give me recruiters any day of the week, because, you know, we're commercial people in recruitment. And so if you, you know, if you give me half an hour to show you Vincere and I show you a product that's going to save you time, make you more productive, make you more money, ultimately, there's no sell. Of course you'll take it. You'd be stupid not to, right? So we decided to focus on Vincere. What we did realize, Mark, is that the system we'd spent the first 5 years building was pretty average. So we scrapped it, burnt it to the ground, and rebuilt it from the ground up and relaunched.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a tough conversation. But anyway, we decided that we're just going to focus on Vincere, make it amazing. And we completely rebuilt it and relaunched it in 2016. So when we talk about growth, really, it's all come from a standing start in 2016, which is when we started to really focus on Vincere, or Vinny, as we call it.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. You know, a lot of software companies go through this kind of early trying to find their market and their niche and what they are going to be great at. And then, so you properly started then in 2016. And so in the last 5 years, how much have you grown? Can you give us like the current size and shape of the business?
So we have just over 1,500 customers globally, and they are very global. So over 50 countries at last count. A customer for us is a recruitment business. They could have anywhere between 1 up to 1,000 licenses. We have 100 people working here at Vincere. We've got 5 offices. So Singapore, Sydney, Saigon, London, and Ibiza. And you know, we're growing. We're growing at a nice rate. It's been quite a journey. We're extremely product focused, though, Mark. We aren't afraid to admit that. We don't really see ourselves as a sales organization. We see ourselves as a true SaaS business, purely focused on the recruitment and staffing sector. We don't care about any other type of customers apart from recruiters. That's all we'll ever do.
Fantastic. So why Saigon? How did you end up there? And what, in your experience, because I have a number of clients who are living in one place and then their clients are in a different country. So they're sort of recruiting internationally and maybe their candidates are in another country still. What do you see as being the pros and cons of that scenario, and how's that shifted during the pandemic?
So great question. So we actually HQ'd out of Singapore, and that's where it's still, you know, our HQ is. However, back in 2015, when we had that cash crunch and we had to make, you know, the decision on what direction do we take this business in, who do we really focus on, we realized that if we were going to outpace our competitors and really build the platform, you know, the full breadth of this all-in-one platform, we had to be somewhere where we could really scale a tech business. Singapore was really terrible for us in that respect. I know a lot of people say it's a great place to have a tech firm. That certainly wasn't our experience. We found it to be a bit of a honey trap, to be honest. So we made the decision to move to here, to Saigon. Believe me, I had 2 very young children at the time. I wasn't exactly, you know, overjoyed at the thought of living in Vietnam. I really thought it was, you know, a third world country. I wasn't really on the Vietnam train at the time, but I did because it was the right decision for the business. And, you know, 5 years in, it's probably the best decision we made for the business, full stop.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Vietnam's, I don't know if your listeners probably think what I thought about 5 years ago. I think Vietnam, ooh, not sure about that. But I would say it's probably the best place in the world to run a tech business from. You know, it's,
wow, why do you say that?
Well, it's got, you know, growing population. I think it's the highest, the fastest growing economy in Southeast Asia last year, even through COVID. Highest literacy rates in the world. Young population, average age is about 30. The skills of in tech are, you know, extremely high. We started with a team of about 20 people here. This is the fastest growing team that we've had. We had headcount growth of about 30% on tech team through COVID. It allows us to be able to keep our development costs relatively low, so we can just focus on the product, keep the development going on the product. Because we see that as the battleground. If you have an amazing product, people will come to you and they'll never leave. So that's kind of been our strategy. Not spend too much on the sales teams and marketing strategy, to build the product and the rest will kind of organically come. And anyway, that's been our route and it's worked quite nicely. Have you been to Saigon? Have you ever been out?
No, yet? I've never been to Asia. So, so rewind a second. So 2015, 2016, you mentioned a cash crunch. How bad was that? Like what was the scenario?
Yeah, it was pretty intense. We had to, in tech, you can play around with tech, but ultimately you got to make money, right? We just decided, let's just stop with the expensive sales and marketing strategies. And we learned the hard way that your product has to be amazing. Let's take it back to basics. Let's focus on what we know. Let's listen to the customer and let's build this thing out and really grow it the right way. So that's the decision we made.
Yeah. And so then you relocating with your young kids to Saigon, that must have been quite a sort of, culture shock and everything else. Like what was it like in the early days just acclimatizing? I mean, it sounds like you've been living the expat lifestyle for a while. So that part was, you were already comfortable with, but new country with young kids, you don't have the support, like the family support, even just knowing your way around and how everything works can be challenging. I would imagine. What was it like in the early days getting set up?
Pretty intense, but the wonderful thing about having a business that you love, and that's challenging you, is you don't probably think about or dwell on stuff like that too much. You just crack on and you make sure that you're going to make it worthwhile. And my attitude was always like, okay, if we're moving to Vietnam, I care about social life. I want to focus on this thing. Let's get it successful as quickly as possible. And let's really hunker down and, make sacrifices. And, if you're not going to be with your family, if my family's back in England or, whatever. I want to make sure that at least I'm using the time wisely and we're seeing progress and we're pushing this as far as we can take it. So,
awesome.
Yeah, do you know what? Okay. I can't even remember what it was like. It's 5 years ago. I can't remember.
So,
it's all right. They've got,
in a way,
at the time, they've got Grab here. It's all good.
Since you're listening to this podcast, it tells me that you're someone who's interested in personal growth and business improvement. That's something we have in common. I really enjoy listening to podcasts, reading and listening to business books, watching TED Talks. But by far the most important investment I've made in my own development has been working with a coach. It started back in 1999, 2000, when I was working as a recruiter. I hired a coach and he helped me to double my billings in 90 days. It sounds corny, but it was really a life-changing experience. Since then, I've worked with various coaches almost continuously over the years, and it's made a massive difference to my own personal and business success. In fact, that first experience of working with a coach was the catalyst for me ultimately deciding that much as I loved recruitment, my true purpose was to become a coach and enable others to achieve their full potential. Fast forward to today, and I work with recruitment business owners to help them escape the feast and famine roller coaster and create consistent, predictable billings. If you'd like to know more, you can apply for a free strategy session at recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. Okay, so apart from that cash crunch early on, which prompted you to concentrate on one core niche, which was going to be recruiting and staffing, and to relocate the development team to Saigon, what other sort of business challenges have you had to overcome along the way?
Oh my gosh. I mean, the move to Vietnam was a pretty intense one, to be honest. A big challenge that we had until probably the past couple of years was probably challenging people's perceptions around the fact that we were based, or I was based, in Vietnam. So for the first like 2.5 years of the, you know, of the business, I was really the only salesperson. So most of the sales calls would be me pitching from Ho Chi Minh, right? Now, a lot of customers in our core areas, which would be, you know, ANZ, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK, they didn't used to like, there would be resistance around the fact that I wasn't, you know, based around the corner and could come and do a face-to-face demo. They didn't like that because, and I can't blame them, you know, it's because the norm at the time was that if you were buying a CRM, someone would, a few people would pitch up in a suit and, you know, give you a half-day demo. Which, you know, obviously, because of our model, I just couldn't do that. So I had to figure out which prospects were a good match for me, which were progressive enough to kind of understand that it didn't really matter. Because at the end of the day, once you've bought the software stays with you, not the salesperson. So that was really challenging. But it's funny because that changed a lot since COVID.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So now, I think until probably COVID hit, I was almost a little bit reticent to even be really loud and proud about the fact that, you know, we were an Asia-based business because, you know, I felt it hurt us with prospects. I've got to say now, when I speak to people, it doesn't really matter where they are, and they ask me, where are you? And I say, Ho Chi Minh. It's actually really interesting for them. And the warmth of the call, it probably heats up rather than cools off. And that's crazy.
Awesome.
That's a change in what, a year or so?
Totally. I mean, I think it's twofold. A, people have had to work that way and they've realized, oh, actually it's fine, right? Mm. So everybody's comfort level with that has increased. But I also really think that when you are being authentic and real with people, then that itself is attractive. It's an attractive quality rather than, and I have, most of my clients are small and they try and appear a lot of, I see this a lot, recruiting companies trying to appear bigger than they are. And like, they'll have these websites, which are very like pictures of like the Gherkin in London or like buildings and stuff. And I'm like, where are you on this website? I don't see you anywhere. And they're like, oh yeah, but I don't want people to know it's just me and, or a small team. And I'm like, but do you know what? I think people ultimately are buying into you. Like when you actually talk to clients, they're not buying the corporate brand. They're buying you and your capabilities and your experience. So do you not think it's better to be real and your website?
Totally.
And so I think if you like, okay, we're in Ho Chi Minh. And that's, I think that's kind of cool actually, because it's like, oh, well, why did you do that? And what, I mean, people can instantly see how that could be a good business strategy, at least if they're smart and they're thinking about, you know, things more progressively, as you say.
Yeah, it's really true, because you straight away, that question comes up. They're like, all right, really? That's interesting. And I'm like, yeah, well, why are you based there? And it's like, well, you know, we can keep our cost base really low and give you tech, you know, at such a pace. You know, there's never a dull moment as a Philly customer. There's always new stuff that's, you know, weapons that we're delivering. As soon as they get their head around that, they're like, oh, actually, that's great. I don't need to see you for a coffee. That's so 2019, darling.
Right, exactly.
See you for a Zoom.
You've turned it into a selling point instead of a disadvantage. I think that's, that's clever.
I totally agree with what you say, though. I think that authenticity is so important with, well, just people in general, but especially so with recruiters. Because I just think our heightened sense of sniffing out BS is, you know, very acute. And if you're like one of our values here since day one, actually, is own it. I think if you do own it, own who you are, own your model, own your business. And yes, some people might not like it, and that's okay too. I think it's the way to go for sure. We've all seen enough gherkins on websites.
Exactly. Yeah. Be yourself and be like whatever, like claim your territory and be yourself, and people, the right prospects will be attracted to that. And rather than, you know, having this trying to pretend you're something you're not. This podcast has been awesome from that point of view for me and my kind of imposter syndrome, because, you know, when people are spending hours and hours and hours with me, and you can't pretend to be someone you're not for that long, it would be exhausting. And you wouldn't be able to sustain it, right? So I just have to just kind of be myself. And, you know, some people are probably going to listen and go, ugh, that guy's not for me. But then other people, hopefully the right people, are going to like my style and the way I come across. And so, you know, I can't think of any other way to really to do this other than just be yourself.
Yeah, it must be great for business for you though, Mark, because, you know, I've listened to your podcast, and when we first spoke, I felt like I was speaking to an old friend because I kind of spent 3 hours with you already.
Oh, awesome. Oh, that's kind of you to say. I love that. Well, let's talk about inbound marketing, because it's something we've chatted about before and something we're both passionate about. I understand that because you have a really interesting way that you have set up your KPIs in the business, and you do a lot of focus on generating inbound leads on LinkedIn and stuff. Can you talk about your sort of own marketing strategy for Vincere? Mm. Because I think the way that you do things could also work really well for recruiting businesses.
So for the first few years of the business, we didn't really have a marketing strategy, to be honest. The marketing strategy was not spend a penny on marketing and spend it all on the product, because we are very product focused. What we have really woken up to is the fact that we don't need to spend a lot on marketing. We don't want to. We don't want to have a massive sprawling sales team. That's not us. What we do want to do though is to have our customers who don't see us as a vendor, who see us as a partner. And as part of that partnership, they will be our marketers. So our extended marketing team is our community of customers. And recruiters are amazing like this. You know, if I give a deal, and, you know, if we give a discount or we give something attractive to a new customer, we say, okay, you give me something in return. Yeah. Okay. You go out, you be a Vinny advocate and you give us referrals, and you know, that's how it works. So that's worked really well for us. The other thing that's worked really nicely, and I feel like I'm quite late to the party here, is, LinkedIn. So latter half of last year, I wanted to become more visible on LinkedIn because I was a bit lazy with it, to be honest. Wasn't really doing much with it. So I started to post more regularly and make more of a concerted effort to put out content and just communicate what we were doing, not as a way to get leads per se, just as a way to kind of connect with customers and just kind of build a network, really. So I started doing that the latter half of last year, and I realized, you know, November, December, that effect on our business in terms of engagement with customers, new business, partners, even when, you know, we've been trying to hire people, just employer branding, had been phenomenal. So,
wow.
In January, I made the decision to scrap all KPIs for the sales and customer success team, and just focus on one thing, which was just be more visible on LinkedIn. Be more consistent on posting on LinkedIn. So that's something that we've tried this year, and the effects have been really, really interesting.
Wow, that is very progressive, to use that word again. What kind of stuff are the team? Well, what are you doing? What are the team doing? And what impact has that had?
So I started working with an amazing guy called David Wolstenholme, who's based in Australia. He's a Brit based in Australia, who's sort of giving me coaching on how to kind of, you know, how to post, what to post, that kind of thing. So that was great for me. And then for our team, we work with an awesome guy called Sean Anderson, who has the Hoxo Academy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we, our businesses have got quite a lot of affinities, actually. We have a lot of customers in common, and Sean runs something called an academy, and all of our team went through this academy. It's an 8-week program run by Sean, group sessions and just coaching. It's actually designed for recruiters, it's sales essentially. And I'd really recommend it to anybody listening. Check him out. He does some awesome content. If you're trying to be more engaged with LinkedIn, highly recommend.
Awesome. So I don't know Sean personally, but I know of him. And so can you give me an example of like what kinds of things you've been putting out and how you feel that has had an impact on Vincere?
A mix of some personal stuff, which I won't lie, was quite challenging at first because I don't even use Facebook. And I'm a lurker on Instagram. So I'm not exactly, queen of social or anything like that. But I've been putting out a little bit more personal stuff with a mix of, I think the trick is not to make it all about you, and business. People want to develop a bit of a relationship with you, I suppose, and sort of feel like they want to get to know you a little bit. Trying to get the blend of, and I also think it's really hard not to sound too show-offy on LinkedIn. You want to talk about, sound boastful because you don't want to sound like a dick. I've been trying to keep the mix and the balance, a bit personal, a bit business, a bit how wonderful Vincere is, a bit how terrible we are sometimes as well. It's just keeping a balance, I guess. You're very good on LinkedIn though. I'm not going to tell you anything, Mark. You are amazing with your LinkedIn.
Thank you for saying that. I've made a concerted effort this year to be very consistent. I'm trying to post 6 days a week. I've not quite managed, but like
that's a lot.
At least 5 days a week. And with our Inner Circle coaching group, we've got everybody, like we're really pushing this and challenging people because the idea is we want people to develop from being that burnt out sort of recruiter trapped in that vendor, model where they're, having to work in a transactional way with clients. And we want them to evolve to being a respected leader in their field.
Yeah.
And so that they generate inbound leads, number one, but also number two, when they're engaging with clients, they are able to command a premium fee. They're able to win a retainer and get, the exclusivity. They're able to be selective about the clients that they partner with. And, if you want to achieve that, you have to, it's not enough just to tell people that you're a market leader. You have to demonstrate leadership and be visible in your marketplace and really, just step into the spotlight a little bit and give value and share knowledge with your ecosystem and try and be helpful to people. But do that as, as consistently as you can and as authentically as you can. And then the thing is though, Eloise, it's like going to the gym, right? You can't work out three times and then go, why can't I see any difference? I think it does take a sustained effort over time to build momentum. And so sometimes recruiters say to me, Mark, I've been posting for 2 weeks and I have not had any inbound leads yet. And I'm like, keep going. You're doing the right things. It also elevates and amplifies everything else you're doing. So it all connects up. So if you're sending out, cold emails or you're cold calling or you're, connecting with people on LinkedIn or whatever, those in isolation are okay. But if you're doing a whole mix of stuff and they're seeing you on LinkedIn appearing in their newsfeed on a regular basis, then they start coming to know, like, and trust you. And then they're more likely to buy into you and take your call and, agree to an appointment and so on. So I think it kind of like, I don't believe in this outbound versus inbound argument. I think it's really a blended approach that has, you know, going to have the best overall impact.
I totally agree. I do think it's not the answer to the world's problems, but I think it can be such a win. And it's like a pain barrier. You know, you will have a few months of it not really, you know, giving you much. But then what's really interesting is, you know, having conversations with people who have never liked a single post you've ever done. You know, you don't know if they've even seen you on LinkedIn. They say, oh, great post the other week. And you think, who else is seeing this stuff? Who I don't register.
Absolutely. It's exactly like it's so powerful when you have a conversation with someone and they say, oh, I saw, like, or you say, how did you hear about me? And they say, oh, I've been seeing a lot of your content on LinkedIn and I really like this video that you made or whatever. And you weren't even aware that they had seen it because they hadn't commented or anything.
Especially,
it's powerful.
Especially great for, you know, those businesses which are in growth mode right now, recruitment firms who are in growth mode, looking to hire other recruiters who, you know, will also be spending all day on LinkedIn. You know, if you've got a cool business that's going somewhere and you've got your purpose and you're growing, you've got to communicate that to, you know, other recruiters who, you know, you might be hiring.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. It's really being aware of your three audiences, which are, of course, your clients, your candidates, and recruiters who may join your firm as well, and having a little bit of content aimed at each of those audiences. So talking about your own team then, like you mentioned that you're asking them to post consistently. How often do they need to share content on LinkedIn?
I'm saying 3 times a week.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's ideal. You know, we've got so much going on with product releases and things that they could be messaging, you know, about the business. You know, they probably only really have to be creative with probably really one post of their own, truly original. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think 3 times a week is reasonable. They're starting to see results now. So, you know, probably next quarter that won't be a KPI anymore because, you know, they'll want to do it because they're motivated to do it because they see the benefits.
Awesome. It's really interesting. You mentioned also about the blend of business related stuff and also personal stuff. Because what I see is that when I post like tips for recruiters, like on winning retainers or, you know, negotiating a bigger fee or whatever, then you get a certain amount of traction with that. And I think it's good because, so this is advice for listeners on like knowing what to post. Pick a handful of kind of recurring topics that you want to become known for. Of course, they need to map onto, for your target audience, what are the issues that they care most about, right? So I guess that's the first starting point is, what are the problems that your clients in your specific niche are, or challenges they're up against that you can solve, and then, you know, talk consistently about those topics. However, once in a while, maybe even if it's just, you know, 10% of your content, should be much more personal and give people a window into like your own story, your own life, or your experience, your hobbies, your interests, or whatever. And what I've seen is that those posts get way more traction for some reason. And it must just be, well, I don't exactly know why that is, but the stories where you share something more personal seem to get a lot more viral, you know, impact.
And are you part of Facebook or Instagram or any of the other, are you a LinkedIn man?
Exactly. I have all of those platforms, but I don't personally spend time on anything apart from LinkedIn. Like we post stuff. I have a private Facebook group for my my clients, but I just don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. So LinkedIn is the only social platform I'm really actively engaged with.
And are you a weekend scroller?
Yes. Do you know what's funny? My best ever post, I posted on a Saturday.
Oh, really?
As an experiment. Yeah, because I only ever posted Monday to Friday. And then I thought, I wonder if it's worth posting on Saturday. And turns out it is. I got like 100,000 views on this post. And that kind of made me realize people are addicted to LinkedIn. Sorry, and they're checking it out on the weekends as much as on weekdays.
But you're probably the same as me. You know, we're looking to connect with recruitment business owners, really, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe you're more on the smaller side and I'm slightly more interested in like more the mid-market side. Yeah. But, you know, and I know what I'm like as a business owner. Just because it's Saturday or Sunday, you know, you're still interested. Just want to keep an eye out. So, yeah, I'm a weekend scroller as well for my sins.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's that's the downside of social media is the addictive quality of it. So, Eloise, one thing I wanted to ask you, speaking of personal versus business, could you talk to me about dealing with adversity? Because one of the themes of the show is resilience and, you know, having come through tough experiences and that being something that you use rather than that breaks you. What would you say has been like that key experience for you?
For me, it would definitely be when my first child, Eve, was born. So she was born in April 2013 in Singapore. It was not long after we'd founded the business and we just literally a few weeks before got quite significant financial backing from a PE firm. So things were kind of going quite well. Eve, our firstborn, landed and it became quickly obvious that she had some quite serious health issues. So she was diagnosed with a very rare genetic skin disorder, which is called recessive dystrophic epidermolysis bullosa, which is more commonly known as butterfly syndrome. So Eve has what they call butterfly skin. What it boils down to is that she, if she knocks herself, if she you know, grazes herself, the skin just falls off. So she has to have twice daily dressing changes. She has to be kind of, you know, protected, I guess. And, you know, there's implications when they get to be teenagers around skin cancers and that kind of thing. The mortality rates are about 60% for recessive dystrophic strain of what she has. Once they get out of their teens. So that came as a complete shock. Neither in my family nor my husband's family have we ever had anything like this. It's just a complete random curveball that life threw at us. And it happened at a time when we were really, you know, all in with this business. We invested everything in it. So that reframed everything for me, for us. And it made us really have that fire in our belly when it came to making this business a success. Because, you know, quite simply, failure was not an option. You know, we're driven to, you know, not just provide financial security for our kids, right? Because you've got to pay the bills. But, you know, we want to ultimately, the dream would be to be able to, you know, make a significant impact and help find a cure for this awful disease.
Wow, that's an incredible mission. And that's, your mama bear instincts must have just gone into overdrive there, you know, wanting to protect our kids is like, I guess that's the biggest thing for every parent, right? So,
I mean, I remember when Mark. I remember when she was born. Basically, she didn't have any skin on her left leg, and it was quite badly deformed. She was tiny as well. She was like 2.1 kg. Like four pounds too. She's a really little baby. And the doctor in Singapore said, oh, you know, we probably have to amputate. And I remember saying, no, that's when the mama bear kicks in. You go, come on. No, rewind. Let's not tell stories or let's not make assumptions here. We get a diagnosis and then we decide what happens. But, you know, let's not make any silly statements. Let's just take things step by step. And you know what, Mark? Eve has flourished. So she can, and the British doctor at the time said this to me. He said, you know, it's okay. Her skin will grow, like we can treat. And she'll walk, she will run, and she'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And she does all those things. Albeit, you know, she has challenges with it. But, you know, she's a very well-adjusted little girl and she's the happiest little girl you'd ever meet. you know. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Mm.
And that's awesome that you've linked this to kind of like your mission and wanting to contribute in a big way to something that is significant personally and affects other people. I think that's awesome, Eloise. Wow, that's huge.
I can't say thank you for that because I'd feel like a real shyster. I think that would be false modesty. I think so many parents, you know, you get thrown stuff with your kids health-wise that I don't think you can ever sort of sit back and think, oh, you know, aren't I wonderful for dealing with it? Nah, life throws you stuff like that and you just, you get on with it, don't you? Because it's your kids ultimately and you just don't have a choice. You have to do the right thing for them. So
absolutely. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And look, I really enjoyed this conversation. Let's keep in touch and do this
again.
See
you on LinkedIn, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be checking out your content and seeing what you're posting 3 times a week, right?
Oh, God.
So I'm going to hold you to that. Listen, we'll post a link to your website in the show notes, but can you say it on air for those who are maybe jogging or doing the dishes right now and can't go and check it out?
Yeah, of course. So you can find me, Eloise Sutton-Kirkby, on LinkedIn. But the business is www.vincere.io. So that's spelled sincere, but with a V instead of an S.
Oh, that's a good way of remembering. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did choose a difficult name to pronounce. That was...
I know. I kind of have regretted that so many times. But, you know, we like the meaning. Because it means to win, to conquer in Latin. So we wanted something timeless. But also, you know, in recruitment, you know, winning is everything, right? You don't get paid for having the second best candidate, you know? So, you know, it came back to that idea of, you know, we really want to help those small, mid-sized firms. We want to be their competitive edge through tech and beat the big guys. It sounds terribly aggressive, doesn't it? But hey. There you go. What can I say?
I like it.
Thank you. Eloise, call us Vinny for short, Mark.
Vinny. Okay, that's easy. Fantastic. Eloise, have an awesome day and look forward to talking again.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. You take care of yourself.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.